ever made a mistake on social media? Like posting something on Facebook that startled or offended friends and family? Do you get scolded by people you know because you're always doing things with your smartphone and not engaging in the conversation or the activity taking place? Do you think social media is really antisocial? Well, we are going to talk about achieving a tech-life balance this hour in the age of social media and constant communication with the sister of Facebook creator Mark Zuckerberg. That's right. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we will welcome your questions and your concerns about using social media. How do you decide what to share, how much to share, or when do you decide it's time to walk away from your screen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You, of course, can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are very happy to have with us Randi Zuckerberg. She is CEO and founder of Zuckerberg Media and editor-in-chief of Dot Complicated, a modern lifestyle company. She is also the author of a new book about social media, work and personal relationships, and fostering this tech-life balance. It is Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. Good morning.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. So do you think that social media is innately good or bad?
I do think it's innately good. I think that as humans, we have a desire to connect, to share details about our lives, and to just know that there's people out there who care about what we're doing. I do think, though, that we have to understand social media, it's just a tool, just a website. It's how we use it that makes it good or bad.
Yeah, what are the advantages of using social media?
Now, I think, there's so many advantages. For people who maybe they have a disability, maybe they're confined to their home, maybe they're going through a really rough period, they really need the support of others, it can open up a whole new world to people who are really struggling. It can also be a great lifeline to people who are looking for a new job, who are looking for love. It's more than ever, people are finding love online these days. But it can definitely, at the same time, detract away from your real-life relationships if you're spending too much time in front of the screen and not enough time investing in the people you care about offline. So with everything, it's about using it in moderation and using it in a way that enhances your life instead of taking over your life.
Is that the only drawback, that some of us spend too much time on it?
I think definitely as parents, I talk a lot in my book about oversharing and the fact that a lot of parents don't realize that when they share photos of their children online, that they are creating a digital footprint for their children, even without speaking to their child about the kind of identity they want to have online. So that's definitely something I speak a lot with parents about because it's new to this day and age. It didn't used to be the fact that we were creating a digital footprint for our children even before they were born.
Yeah, but you also write about the mistakes you personally made with your use of social media. Care to share?
Sure. Well, I think fast forward 5-10 years from now, and we're going to be living in a world where all of our business leaders, all of our politicians, everyone will have posted something they regretted on social media at some point. I think as a society, we're becoming more understanding and more accepting that that's the norm. But for me, early on, working at Facebook and working in Silicon Valley, I was really an early user of a lot of these social media platforms and therefore also an early mistake maker on a lot of these platforms. I remember there was one incident in particular. I was with a group of girlfriends and we were rejected from a really trendy nightclub in New York City. And I decided to use this brand new site called Twitter to express my feelings about the bouncer and the club. And of course, the next morning I woke up, it was all over all of the tech blogs. And that was a huge wake-up moment for me. I realized, gosh, I've spent the last few years at Facebook counseling celebrities, brands, politicians, in the fact that their voice is now louder than ever before, but I never really stopped to think that my own voice could be that loud.
Yeah, so it was loud. What was so wrong with that? Why was that a mistake if you wanted to, you know, complain about something?
Well, for me, you know, now I, looking back, I realize that publicly shaming someone online is just not the right way to handle anything, especially you should always take up a confrontation with someone in person. When you immediately jump to publicly shaming someone online, you kind of summon the online masses and peanut gallery in both your favor and against you. So you have to really be ready for that. There are lots of situations I write about in my book where you can see that it's very easy to overreact when you immediately jump to the internet to solve or deal with a confrontation. And that's definitely something that I've learned from personal experience.
Yeah. Well, what did your experience at Facebook teach you about tech-life balance?
Well, in Silicon Valley, it's definitely the balance skews much more on the tech side of life. It's exciting to be out here in Silicon Valley. There's really a sense in the air of innovation. Almost every conversation you overhear in cafes and restaurants has to do with technology, someone doing a startup, someone talking to venture capitalists about getting funded. It's an exciting world. On the same token, though, because everyone's drinking the Kool-Aid out here about innovating and disrupting, it's easy to forget that there's humans on the other side who are using these technologies we're building, and that the average parent in the middle of the country, isn't sitting there thinking, gosh, I'm so glad Twitter is disrupting journalism. They're thinking, oh my gosh, what are my children doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, how tangled up do you think we are here in the Midwest with our wired lives?
Well, I do have to say, people in the Midwest from the book tour that I've been on are some of the just friendliest and most down-to-earth people that I've met. I've really had a wonderful time traveling the country. I think that in some respect, people are sitting up and paying a lot closer attention to technology consumers in the Midwest, I think especially after Pinterest really took off. That was a huge aha moment for us in Silicon Valley, because it wasn't early Silicon Valley adopter men who contributed to Pinterest's massive success. It was women in the middle of the country. And all of a sudden you saw investors picking their heads up, founders picking their heads up, thinking, oh my gosh, this is a really powerful part of society, and we need to develop more tools for this.
Yeah. Explain Pinterest to those of our listeners who haven't been on there.
Sure. So for my wedding, I created kind of a mood board where I actually cut things out of magazines and pasted, or an inspiration board, if you will. Well, Pinterest allows you to do that completely online. You can find, if you're decorating your home, you can find inspiration for beautiful colors and pieces of furniture and pin them to a virtual inspiration board. You can do the same with fashion or travel, really anything that's aspirational and that you're looking forward to in your life. So people have lots of pin boards. My own sister, actually, she is a great baker, and she has thousands of followers on Pinterest just because she posts beautiful photos of things that she's baked. So it's also a great way to show yourself as an expert in a certain topic online.
Yeah, we're talking about people who are on social media a lot. What about people who, I have a very close friend who says absolutely not to Facebook and other social media. She does not want to have an account. She's very worried about privacy and very worried about other things.
You know, I think that's why it's everyone's prerogative to join these companies. They're voluntary, definitely not required, and people should definitely not join social media if they don't feel comfortable with it. That being said, I do think that people run the risk of missing out on photos that their family is sharing. There are ways to be on these social networks, but maintain a very low profile, such that maybe you're only sharing photos with four or five people, or maybe you're even just only interacting in private groups. So I definitely encourage people to think, you know, people should not do anything they're uncomfortable with, but they should also understand that there's perhaps a chance of missing out on opportunities.
I agree. I wish you were on there because it also, everybody is on a little group and we're planning an event, but we have to separately call or email her because she's not on. So it disrupts the relationship.
Absolutely. It makes it so that you have to really want to keep in touch with that person and really want to put the effort in.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, too, about an ad that's going viral just over the last couple of days. It was an ad from Apple. And
oh, yeah, I just saw it.
Yeah, Misunderstood it was called. And it showed photos of a video of a teenager at a holiday gathering, not really taking part, it seemed, in any of the festivities. He wasn't ice skating or opening the presents. He was there always glued to his smartphone, to his mobile device. And then, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know, the teenager that is not really paying attention to what's going on, always on the phone. But then at the end, the kid displays the video that he put together, these very loving scenes of the family enjoying the moment. And I guess that was the message, was you can be engaged in the moment and plugged in, I guess, and, you know, looking at your phone. What was your reaction to that?
Gosh, I had a very mixed reaction. First of all, I thought it was a beautifully done ad. It was really masterful storytelling. I actually found myself tearing up a bit at the end when all of a sudden you see the reveal that he's been filming his family all along and not just isolated in his phone. But for me, I felt torn. On one hand, I felt like, gosh, this is really emphasizing how tech can bring people together, how it can enhance creativity in young adults. On the other hand, though, he was missing out on all of those events. He was an outsider filming the family, and he was not partaking in the snowball fights and the tree decorating and everything like that. So, you know, I found myself thinking, gosh, where are the parents in this situation who are encouraging him to put the phone away?
Yeah, it looked like Grandpa threw a sock at him, but nobody told
him. That's right.
Nobody told him to start decorating the tree. So is it possible, though, is social media disengaging us from real-life conversation and activities?
I think it definitely runs the risk of doing that if we don't use it mindfully, especially with mobile phones. They're both a blessing and a challenge in our lives because, on one hand, as a working mom, it is the smartphone that gives me the freedom and the flexibility to be doing my job, but also to be there for the important moments, the preschool pickups and drop-offs. I wouldn't be able to do that without the flexibility that tech and mobile phones give me. On the other hand, it's easy to find yourself being that mom at the playground that's checking email or texting instead of being there physically present and emotionally present with your children. So I definitely think it's a goal of mine and hopefully will be for many of us to just use tech more mindfully in 2014 and make sure that it's enhancing our relationships instead of distracting us from them.
We are talking with Randi Zuckerberg. She is the sister of Facebook creator Mark Zuckerberg and was an early employee of Facebook. She is the CEO and founder of Zuckerberg Media and editor-in-chief of .complicated, which is a modern lifestyle company. And she is the author of the book .complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. And we're talking about how we can use our tech more mindfully and how we can foster some sort of tech life balance. Do you think you've got that figured out, or do you have some questions or concerns? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talking about the benefits and some of the drawbacks of social media. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about social media and whether or not it's antisocial. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Randy Zuckerberg, author of Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. And our first caller is Sam in Waukesha. Hi, Sam.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm 20 years old, and I see a lot of my friends just glued to their phones all the time. I recently deleted my Facebook, or deactivated it because you can never really delete it. And I just see a lot of people completely disconnected to what's happening in the real world and so focused on what's happening on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, all of the different social medias, constantly Snapchatting and always on their phone, not paying attention to what's actually happening. And it's really kind of sad, I think. A lot of people my age are missing out on a lot of great experiences because they're too interested in taking pictures of it rather than actually doing something.
Sam, I'm so excited that somebody who's 20 is listening to the show, number one. But number two, how did your disconnecting or deactivating your Facebook account, how has that affected your relationship with your friends?
I mean, it's fine. People that I actually stay in contact with, I can text. If I need to talk to them, I see them rather frequently, so it's not a big deal. I didn't check it very often anyways, so it hasn't really affected me.
Yeah. So did you feel as though you weren't really looking at it anyway, but you decided you just didn't need the account and you don't feel you're missing out on anything?
No, not really.
Yeah. Randy, what's your reaction to that?
Well, gosh, I think, you know, Sam, you definitely touched on something. I see friends who are out at lunch or dinner all the time and they're text messaging each other instead of realizing they're at the table together. Or even more frustrating for me is going to a concert and it's just a sea of mobile phones, people watching a concert through a tiny screen when they're at the concert themselves. So I definitely think you've hit on something. We recently did a study of many young adults using mobile devices and social media, and they said they feel an intense pressure to document every moment of their lives. That, in fact, 50% felt that if they didn't document a moment of their lives, it was a wasted moment.
Oh, that's kind of sad, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so how do we get these people who feel that way to to rein in their picture taking?
Well, I think definitely it starts small steps. But you know, if you're out with your friends, encouraging people to put their phones away, not have them out at the table where it's an easy distraction. There's a game that I like to play that can sometimes frustrate your friends, but is very effective, where everyone stacks their phone in the middle of the table and the first person who reaches for it has to pay the bill for everyone. So that is an effective way of getting people to not check their phone. But I think even just encouraging people to live in the moment a bit more, if you're hosting a dinner or a party this holiday season, try even including in your invitation that you hope people will physically and emotionally be there without their technology devices.
Yeah, those are good ideas. On the other hand, I'm guilty of taking probably more pictures than I need to take when I'm doing something. However, if I'm getting together with girlfriends, we'll take a group shot to document it. And it's not like every moment I'm taking a picture when there is some sort of event, but I do take a picture at the event. Isn't it nice to have that that photograph of that lovely time?
It is, and gosh, even our own president this week got in trouble for taking a selfie at Nelson Mandela's memorial. So even our president falls victim to this photos or it didn't happen mentality in our society. So it is quite interesting and entertaining how it's really spread into all areas of our lives.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you to diagnose whether I have a problem or not. If I know, I'm just kidding. I take a picture at an event, and yeah, maybe I'll share that. Here we all are at the circus or whatever. And but then I'm having fun, and I put the phone away. How much picture sharing is too much picture sharing?
Absolutely. You know, I think that that's a wonderful thing to do. You're out with friends. It's a great thing to share. What I always find funny, though, is I always find people who fancy themselves food bloggers or photographers. They're uploading pictures of every single thing they're eating all day long. And half the time it doesn't even look good. It only looks good to them because they're hungry.
Well, you didn't see my Christmas cookie photos, did you?
You know, I'm sure they were beautiful Christmas cookies.
Let's go to Judy in Beloit. Hello, Judy. I'm sorry, it's Jody. Go ahead, Jody.
Hi, good morning. I had to call in right away because I have two teenagers, 16 and 17, junior and senior in high school. And we are a non-electronic house for the most part. No TV, no internet. And even the person taking the in calls was just like, wow, she's kind of amazed. The flip side is being a divorced parent, they're 1 week with dad and 1 week with me, and they have all the electronics they could want at dad's house, internet, video games, TVs, and in 1 week, really none of that with me.
Yeah, Jody, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's your phone is a little bit fuzzy, and I do want to ask you why it was so important to you to disconnect your kids at your house with no electronics in your house whatsoever, practically.
Exactly what you have been talking about the disconnect from society, basically. I'm constantly getting comments about my kids' social abilities and able to converse on different topics, and they're able to write letters and send mail, which is becoming a complete absolute lost art, for lack of better words. This is our sixth school year with no electronics, and I recently asked them, you know, because they have everything at dad's house and not at mine, which one would they prefer if they had to make a choice? And surprisingly enough, for the sixth school year, they said that they would rather have it at my house because they're more social. We spend more family time together. They do both have Facebook, but they are also able to disconnect from it and see some of the, especially high school drama, unneeded drama that really goes on.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jody, for sharing that. I'm curious, Randy, what you think of that? Jody says her kids are better communicators. They write letters. They're better off without all these constant distractions. And they actually say they prefer it.
Well, gosh, you know, I think you're a great role model for your children, teaching them tech-life balance early on. I do think that children definitely take a lot of their guidance from the behavior of their parents. And so if they have a strong parental figure teaching them the value of face-to-face contact and creativity, it's really, really important. I do think I also, though, I want to make sure, especially, I don't know if either of your children are daughters, but I think especially for young girls, it is very important to have that digital literacy. We need more women going into technology and engineering. And so I also think that there's a happy medium. You definitely don't want children who are glued to social media and their phones all the time, but you also want to make sure they're gaining the skills that they're competitive with their peer group in digital literacy and technology at the same time.
That's a good point. Our caller has dropped off, but so we don't know. But should kids be raised with the technology, but also given the skills to disengage? I guess... I don't mean to criticize, but Jody is saying none of that in the house whatsoever.
You know, again, I think it's everything is a happy medium. There was a study in the UK recently showing that more and more children were showing up to kindergarten not knowing how to hold a pencil, which was really shocking to me. So I think that's definitely an example of going too far. There was... just this week, Fisher-Price launched an infant chair that has an iPad attachment to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually, it was very controversial online. People felt, gosh, you're restraining this 2-3-month-old baby in a chair and kind of strapping an iPad to them. Isn't that going a bit far? So I definitely think you can go too far in one direction, but you can also go too far in the other direction. I think we need to realize we live in the real world. Tech skills are very, very important to future career skills, to our livelihoods, to every aspect of our lives. And keeping children too much from that is doing them just as much a disservice as giving them too much tech.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Randy Zuckerberg, author of Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. Do you spend a lot of time on Facebook, Twitter, or other social media? Or do you try to unplug from time to time or even abstain completely? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How do you try to achieve this tech-life balance that we are talking about? It's Georgia in Madison. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, Joy.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. It's kind of funny, without even thinking about it, while I was on hold, I was checking Facebook. But, you know, it's something that I'd like to be able to do without, but it's so pervasive now in terms of, you know, I'm 27, people my age use it to schedule events and communicate about, you know, things we use it to communicate about school and classes. So it's kind of hard to unplug, but I am probably the only person I know of any age who actually went from having a smartphone to having just a flip phone, because I really didn't like that feeling of being connected all the time. Like, it was a false sense of connection.
Interesting. They still sell those, Georgia.
It doesn't even have a camera. It's a dinosaur. So
it's so funny to hear that. We, in my book, I looked at a lot of studies. We asked people what they would give up before they would give up their smartphone. And gosh, you will not believe the things that people said they would rather give up. 30% of women would rather give up sex for a year than part with their cell phone, smartphone for even a weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
We had, I think, 75% would rather give up wine or wearing shoes than give up their smartphone. People would rather go to prison for a night than give it up. I mean, really, people are incredibly addicted to these devices. So kudos for you for breaking the addiction. It's interesting. Is there anything you miss about not having a smartphone?
The GPS was actually the most useful thing for me, because I do tend to get lost. I still have my digital camera from 5 years ago, so if I want to take a picture, I can. It's just, you know, it has to be something that's worth the effort of actually getting out of the camera and then hooking it up to the computer later.
Right. Georgia, you said you were checking Facebook, though, while on hold. So you're sitting near a regular computer then?
I am, yeah. Technology is very much a part of my life. I'm a student, and I take my notes electronically. In my research, I did a lot of computer analyses. So it's not technology is not something I don't like. It's just I like to be unplugged sometimes.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. What is it that is so addictive about Facebook, Randy? I mean, I know I do the same thing. I never used to do it, but now I'll grab my smartphone when I'm if I. Even, you know, I'm leaving and I'll be checking it in the elevator, even just doing, you know, looking, checking it at all times when it, I never used to do that. Now I do it all the time.
You're right. I think addictive really is the key word. A lot of experts, they talk about how a burst of dopamine is released in your brain anytime you get a text message, an email, a Facebook alert. It actually releases pleasure similarly to taking a hit of drugs. So it actually is an addiction, and they're treating children around the world as young as 4 years old for tech addiction, especially in certain parts of Asia. So definitely something that we have to be aware of. One thing that I recently did, because I found myself kind of mindlessly scrolling Twitter when I was online at Starbucks, when I was online anywhere, I actually moved that app four screens back on my iPhone. So I really have to want to go to it in order. It's not just kind of a mindless scrolling habit anymore.
Well, I can say that I don't have four screens, so I'm just kidding. We are talking with Randy Zuckerberg. She is the author of Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. And we're talking about fostering tech-life balance in the age of social media and constant communication. And we're welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your experiences. How much sharing is oversharing? Do you think you're addicted to social media? How do you try to achieve that balance, tech-life balance? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about social media and our wired lives with Randy Zuckerberg. Randy is the sister of Facebook creator Mark Zuckerberg, was an early employee of Facebook. Now she's the CEO of Zuckerberg Media and editor-in-chief of Dot Complicated, which is a modern lifestyle company, and the author of Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. Let's take another caller. Ray in Rhinelander is with us. Hello, Ray.
Hi. My main concern, I mean, briefly, we need to evolve with technology. I have no problem with that. My problem in looking at this whole thing, I'm looking at the depersonalization, the unevolutionary process that's going on with people where they're actually de-evolving, where they can't seem to be personal one-to-one. I see so much of people going from their house to their car to their phones to their computers to their offices or whatever. And, you know, it's like, what is happening with us? I mean, are we going to get to be these automatons with technology? Or what do you two think of the depersonalization of people being personal?
Yeah. Well, Randy's the expert, so what's going on here, Randy?
It's definitely a good observation. I think more and more you're right. People... it's much easier to hide behind a screen to say something. 30% of people who are dating right now will be broken up with via text message. And I know in my workplace, it's so easy to see people write things over email rather than pick up a phone or talk to someone face to face. So you're right. I think that we have to always remind ourselves there is a human on the other end of any electronic communication, and am I respecting that human enough by communicating with them in this way? One thing that we started doing in our household that's been really effective is taking kind of a digital Sabbath on the weekend. We're not extremely religious as a household, but I really like the idea of kind of giving your tech devices a day of rest and using that day to focus on your friends, your family, yourself.
And that has really been something now that we look forward to as a family, and that's made me much more conscious of my use of tech during the rest of the week.
Yeah, you have a section in the book about tech balance in romantic relationships. So that's different than, I don't know, friendships or coworkers?
Well, definitely. I think, you know, intimacy in all of our relationships is important. It's important to have real-life intimacy, not just, you know, a great email relationship or a text messaging relationship. But I do think so my New Year's resolution for 2014 is no phones, no iPads in bed, because I think, you know, it's so easy to fall into the habit where the first thing you do in the morning is check your phone. The last thing you do at night is check your phone, at sometimes at the expense of even, you know, saying goodnight to the person who's in your bed with you. So for me, that's my New Year's resolution. I encourage anyone out there to join me.
Yeah, that's a good one. What about, I don't know, what's a New Year's resolution we can consider when it comes to social media and our coworkers?
Well, it's interesting. A few years ago, if someone came to me and said, should I Facebook friend my boss, I would have resoundingly said no. But as I was researching my book, there are actually a lot of studies that show that if people know a little bit about you, if your coworkers are Facebook friends with you, if they feel like they have a little more insight into your personal life, it actually makes you more likable in the workplace and gives you a better chance for success, for promotion. So I've changed my tune a bit, and I say, you know, do go ahead, friend that boss if it's the kind of work environment that is conducive to that. But definitely make sure that you're putting your privacy settings so that your boss doesn't need to see everything that you're doing, and so that you make sure you're always putting your best foot forward.
Yeah, they don't need to see the lampshade on the head kind of photos and that kind of thing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but is it going to, I guess it's too late now, but is it okay if my boss sees my photos of my cat?
You know, I think that's actually, it's totally okay. You know, your cat is a part of your family. It's a really big part of your life. And more, we're losing the ability to have a separate professional identity and a personal identity. I think we used to have that luxury, but now all someone has to do is type your name into Google, and there it is, everything to see. You really only get one identity online. So I think, you know, go ahead, be your authentic self, show people what's important to you. Just make sure, you know, maybe people out there want to see one photo of your cat, and the other 400 you can share in a personal private group.
Darn. You do say that we should share some of our personal information in order to bond with coworkers.
Absolutely. Mm. It makes you so much more likable. People want to work with someone that they would feel happy to go get a beer with after. And so sharing aspects of your personal life, it allows you to connect and bond with your coworkers on a deeper level than just the work you're doing. And I think people enjoy seeing shared mutual interests and getting support from one another in that fact. But definitely you can go overboard on the oversharing with your coworkers, for sure.
You know, I think a lot of people have maybe the same situation I do. I do have a lot of friends on a personal account that's not the radio station or the radio show's account. And I think people are finding me because they think this is my Facebook page is my show's Facebook page. But I've decided to it just became easier just to accept a lot of these people who are listeners on my personal page, but I also guide them to the show page. And so I do have a lot of friends on Facebook. How do you suggest we sort through the clutter, people, you know, that have hundreds and hundreds of Facebook friends, to recognize our most meaningful connections?
Yeah, so I have a slightly, I guess, controversial viewpoint on this, but I am actually 100% okay with unfriending. I think it feels like it's a terrible, mean thing to do. But just like you would go through your closet, and if you haven't worn something in a few years, it's time to toss it, I think similarly, if someone shows up and it's, you know, maybe it's their birthday, maybe their name shows up in your newsfeed and you can't immediately remember how you know them or, you know, think, gosh, I don't really want this person seeing all my photos of my children. I think it's perfectly acceptable to do a house cleaning of your friends list. Also, it's actually a responsible thing to do. Because you're right, none of us are programmed to know hundreds and hundreds or thousands of people. Our minds are programmed to keep in touch with about 150 close friends. And I think we need to be very diligent about the company we keep online.
Okay, listeners, if you would like to participate in the discussion or to see information about our guest's company and book, go to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So that's Facebook, The Joy Cardine Show. And you can post a comment there, too. It's funny, I don't think we've had any Facebook comments on this topic, though we've had a number of calls and a number of, we do have some emails. But
maybe people are having tech-life balance.
Maybe. Maybe. So 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to call us to talk about social media and how you're, and just, I guess, our media in general, as we do have Facebook and Twitter and other social media. We have our smartphones. We're talking about our wired lives and how we can uncomplicate them or how we can at least foster some sort of balance. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. Nate in Baldwin is with us now. Hi, Nate.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? What is your thought on this?
Well, my New Year's resolution, I think, is going to be to just kind of think things through. Like when I'm spending money, what am I spending money on? How is it affecting? Because every time you spend money in America, you make a vote. And right now, we're making a vote. We're telling the Apples of the world, the Facebooks of the world, that we like this stuff. We like to be numbed and dumbed down. And what it's doing is it's destroying jobs nationwide. Applebee's is installing iPods in their tables. Think about how many jobs this is going to destroy for, you know, college students, waitresses, waiters all across the country. I'm not just talking about this either. I'm talking about Walmart's. It's only a matter of a couple years before we're checking out all of our things by ourselves, and those employees are no longer needed. And
no, I didn't. I hadn't heard about that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nate. So this technology is taking over our lives, and it's destroying jobs, Randy.
You know, with all due respect, Nate, I would encourage you to learn the facts before. I understand that can be a raw opinion, but technology is also creating hundreds and thousands, millions of jobs. You know, gone are the days where we have milkmen delivering our milk. Maybe that was sad for the milkman industry, but I think it's, you know, undoubtedly supermarkets are convenient and easy. And, you know, sometimes change is difficult in our society. It can be difficult, but then it ends up creating entire new industries and jobs. So I would have to respectively agree to disagree.
Yeah, and Nate said Applebee's was using iPods. I'm thinking he must have meant iPads to order, and he was concerned. Are you even aware of that, Randy?
A lot of restaurants do use iPads to order because sometimes it's hard to flag down a waiter or a waitress if they're busy at another table, if you want to get your bill really quickly. For me, the only thing that I dislike about that is thinking about the germs of how many people have touched that iPad and then you're touching your food.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, sometimes if you're busy or you're in a rush or you want to add something to your order, it can be very convenient.
Abby in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Abby.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to share an incident that had happened on Facebook a few days ago. I had seen one of my friends had posted a very explicit picture of her and her boyfriend. Both of them were naked, and it raised a lot of controversy, some people saying that it was very inappropriate for Facebook, and other people were saying that it was artistic and bold of her to put it up online.
All right, which is it, Randy?
Gosh, well, that's a tough one, but I think for anyone, depending on the line of work that she wants to do for the rest of her life, there are some things that kind of stick with you. I think it's important, you know, we spend so much of our lives trying to advance our careers, trying to get ahead, and it's so easy for one photo, one image to reverse all of the hard work that we've done. So I feel like I'd have to understand more context about your friend and the kind of profession she's in. But for me, I generally think artistic or not, those photos are for private consumption and not public consumption of friends online.
Yeah. Thanks, Abby. Jill in Stoughton is now with us. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Yeah, I just, I guess I would like us to come up with a different term for the people on Facebook, because I don't see those as friends. I think friend has a different connotation for the majority of us, and particularly those of us that might be a little older. And I guess it just saddens me when I hear people talking about, I have 700 friends on Facebook.
So they're not really all friends, Randy.
I think that's right. You know, I remember when, you know, friend, it used to actually mean being a friend. Now you hear the word friend and you immediately think of Facebook. So I think you're right. I think it does need a different term, because our online friends tend to be somewhere between acquaintances and actual friends. I think it's very easy to get lured into a false sense of closeness with people that we interact with mainly online. And there's a whole phenomenon now called catfishing. Monty Teo, the college football player, famously was involved in a scandal earlier this year dating someone online that turned out to be someone completely different. And we're seeing more and more, especially with young adults, that they feel these connections to online friends, if you will, and feel a false sense of closeness. So you're right. I think it's very important to have that distinction.
Yeah. You know, Wisconsin is considering a legislation to limit employers looking at Facebook profiles of potential hires. What do you think of that?
Well, I have two reactions to that. First of all, there was a lot of talk earlier this year about employees demanding passwords, or employers demanding passwords for their employees to check out their social media. I'm very against that. You know, as an employer, you wouldn't demand the key to someone's house to go rummage through their bedside table. So I don't think it's fair to demand the same of their social networks. On the other hand, though, I do think we have to be aware as a society, anytime you apply for a job, you go on a date, you meet someone, the first thing that person is going to do is Google you and Facebook you.
Yeah.
It's just a reality of the society we live in. And so rather than telling employers not to do that, it's up to us to make sure we're putting our best foot forward.
In less than 30 seconds, what's your takeaway for listeners?
Gosh, my takeaway is just, you know, don't be scared of sharing online. Be your authentic self, but just make sure you're doing it mindfully and make sure you're always remembering there's a human with a soul on the other side of every post.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Randy Zuckerberg is author of Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Marika Saval for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you are with us tomorrow. We're going to talk about the wisdom of America's 100-year-olds.